atop Fox News headquarters in New York City. Always seeking solutions, never sowing division. It's Brian Kilmeade.
Welcome to the Brian Kilmeade Show. How are you? I'm Mary Walter, sitting in for Brian. It is great to be with you. Coming up later this hour, Lieutenant Colonel Jim Whaley will be joining us. We're going to talk about Memorial Day and the significance of Memorial Day, especially since it is Fleet Week in New York City. And I love that it coincides with Memorial Day. But we're going to kick it off. One of my favorites, Lieutenant Colonel Alan West is with us. Alan, thank you so much for joining us.
Well, Mary, it's a pleasure to be with you and honor Memorial Day. It's an incredible weekend that's coming up for us to remember those who gave the last full measure of devotion. And greetings from the Republican Party of Texas Convention in San Antonio.
Ah, nice. Very nice. I'm going to be in San Antonio. We're going to be, I think I'm going to be in San Antonio in like September. I'm going to have to, I'll let you know. I'll have to look you up. I just remembered that.
Sure.
You can follow him as well on X at Alan West. It's A-L-L-E-N West on X. So let's jump right into it. Since you are in Texas, immigration being a big deal, the Democrats suddenly have discovered the border. I don't know if you heard that. They suddenly want to have a vote on border policy, which I find amazing. But what I also find amazing is at the same time, the DOJ sued Oklahoma over a state law that says that if you live in the state, they have a law, it's punishable by up to 2 years in prison, that if you live in the state without legal immigration status, that they can arrest you. It's illegal to do so. They are also suing your state of Texas, and they're also suing Iowa. So they want to enforce the law. They want to figure out what's going on with the border, and they want to secure that. But at the same time, they're suing states that are doing it on their own.
Yeah, it's very perplexing, and really the hypocrisy is laughable, because the bottom line is that the Constitution says in Article 4, Section 4, that the federal government is supposed to guarantee that every state in the union protection from invasion, yet they're not doing that. And so Article 1, Section 10, Clause 3 clearly states what the states can do if actually invaded when they're in imminent danger without any admit of delay. So I don't see how the federal government can sit around and sue states, because they are doing what the federal government, by way of 90-plus unconstitutional executive actions from Joe Biden, they're not doing. They are not following the rule of law. They are not protecting American sovereignty, and they're not protecting the sovereignty of our respective states. And when you look at the drug trafficking, the human, the sex trafficking, the terrorist trafficking that is happening, yes, states have to do something to protect their citizens, since this Biden administration has firmly said they will not.
Yeah. So we just had, look what just happened in Quantico on May 3rd. We have two Turkish nationals in the country illegally. One overstayed his student visa. The other arrived a month before in San Diego, got flown, I'm sure. We don't know how he got to Virginia, but my hunch is my taxpayer dollars paid to fly him without ID to Virginia. And somehow, in the course of a month, they happened to find each other, even though one had been in the country for all. They just happen to find each other. They both happen to be from Turkey. They both happen to be in the country illegally. And they both just happen to think that it's a good idea to try to get into Quantico. I don't know. It doesn't sound like a coincidence, right?
Well, you know, I think that the Marines have been there and done that before. If you think about October 23rd of 1983, when they had a truck bomber that drove right up to their barracks there in Beirut. And now we have two domestic terrorists, I mean international terrorists, Islamic jihadists, right here in the United States of America in a truck trying to gain access onto Marine Corps Base Camp Lejeune. Thank God they were stopped, but it just lends you to think about how many others of these cells are out there, because we keep hearing this number of 1.5-2 million gotaways, people that we don't know. We know about the single military age males, hundreds of thousands of them. We know about the tens of thousands of Chinese single military age males. But yet you have an administration that's trying to prevent states from doing what is necessary to find people, arrest people, and get them out of this country, because they have told ICE not to do that.
Yeah, it's just so shattering, so hollow. So I want to ask you a question about, you know, keeping on the line of terrorists coming across the country. You mentioned Chinese military, you know, military age men, all of these people who are coming across, and there's not a woman or child in the bunch. It's all men of that age. So we saw what this happened in Quantico, and we still don't know the details. I don't know what was in that truck. We're not being told anything. So that makes me question, right? I think because they want Joe Biden in office, that they want to keep this going, our enemies, that nothing happens until after the election. I think we're going to see some kind of terrorist attack. I really do. And I pray to God I'm wrong. But I don't understand why China would be sending all of these military age men here if not for that. I mean, you can't just walk out of China because you want a better job.
No, you can't. And you're not going to walk out of China as a single military age male with hundreds of thousands of dollars because you got to pay the cartels to get into this country.
Right.
There are two phases to any operation. There's a shaping phase and then there's a decisive phase. I think we're in a shaping phase right now when you look at what our enemies are positioning themselves and setting conditions to do. Look what just happened in Taiwan, where China, you know, ran this military operation where they surrounded the entire nation of Taiwan, and it was a live fire exercise. So they're preparing, they're shaping, they're setting the conditions. And the same thing when you look at what is happening here in the United States of America. We cannot afford the feckless nature of, and it won't be Joe Biden. I mean, think about it. President Kamala Harris, because Joe Biden's not going to be able to continue on for another, 5 years in this position. He can barely make it, I think, through the next 5 months. So we are at a very precarious situation here in the United States of America, and our enemies are loading up against us. And what are we doing? We're undermining our national security, our foreign policy. You see why Hezbollah, Hamas, the Houthis, all of these are rising up, because we've emboldened Iran and we've enriched Iran. And how shameful it is, Mary, that our government, our Biden administration, will offer condolences to that butcher,
yes,
that president of Iran.
That was horrific. I was shocked. And the UN, a moment of silence. They had a minute of silence for him.
Yes.
It's like, really, would they do that for Hitler? That's the only thing I could think of, is this group of people would
and
mourn Hitler's death.
And our representative stood up
in
that Security Council meeting. I mean, I would have, no way, I would have walked out.
I'm with you. I just want to play this cut for you. This is a Turkish border crosser, since we were just talking about the two Turks. And listen to it. It's a little bit difficult to understand, but he speaks English. But what this is he's absolutely shocked at how easy it is to get into the United States. Listen.
Did you have to pay a cartel?
Yes.
How much?
Around 10,000.
10,000?
Yes. In fact, the American people is right. Completely true. Who come into this country, they don't know. Well, okay, I'm good, but how if they're not good? How they're killer, psychopath, else? Mm-hmm. No guarantee of that. Why, no security check, no background check.
No security check, no background check. You're worrying about who's crossing the border?
Yes. Because people are not look normal.
Yeah. He can't believe no security check, no background check. Aren't we being told that they're doing that, though?
Yeah, we're being lied to that they're doing that. And, that comes from the mouth of, the Homeland Security Secretary, who, should not be in that position, and also the president and others. So we've got a very bad situation. Think about this. This is Turkey, a country where ISIS members were transiting through to go down into Syria and Iraq. So I don't think that Turkey has, very good control of who is coming in and out of their country as well. And now we're allowing that to happen. And the cartels, who are a terrorist organization themselves, anyone that pays them money, they're going to get them across the border.
Right.
And that means bad elements as well.
And all these people, I just find it laughable when they tell me they're coming here for a better life because they're so poor, but they're shelling out 10 grand to get here.
Yes.
Nobody questions that. I have 1 minute left. So since you're at the Republican convention there in Texas, what are Republicans doing? They can't even get it together to impeach Mayorkas, which is so cut and dry. What is going on?
Well, I think what we have happening here in Texas, as a matter of fact, our very own Speaker of the House is in a runoff election, which is the early voting ends today and the actual election will be next Tuesday. People are tired of the very weak leftist Republicans that we have, not just here in Texas, but across the country. And I think you're going to see more constitutional conservatives rise up and get this country back on the right policy and ideological agenda.
I worry about the Never Trumpers. By the way, they gave me a couple extra minutes with you, so I'm so excited.
Okay.
I'm worried about the Never Trumpers, the Mitt Romneys, the Mitch McConnells. Those people, to me, are gearing up now to prepare for a Trump presidency so that they can thwart anything that President Trump might want to do. We saw it happen starting in 2015. We know what happened during his last presidency and how so many things were thwarted, but it was mainly by the left. Now I'm worried that the Never Trumpers on the right are going to join forces with them.
Well, the American people are not going to accept that, being at either side of the aisle that you may be on. I mean, look at what just happened in that rally in the Bronx. So I think that American people are realizing that economically we're not doing well. Our energy security policy sucks. All of our areas of security are horrific, and they want something that's better.
Yeah. Just very quickly, I want to switch gears with you just quickly here. Red states, 19 Republican state attorneys have hit five Democrat-controlled states with a legal challenge because those five Democrat-controlled states, including the People's Socialist Republic of New Jersey, where I am, are doing a lot of anti-fossil fuel agenda moves. Mm-hmm. They're trying to go after the producers, and the red states are saying, wait a minute, that affects us. You can't do that.
Yes.
You can't go after them because it hurts us. And I see this showdown. You see a lot of it happening in Texas as well. We all know what happened with those big the big windmills, you know, when they all froze mm-hmm. up and everything, and you guys are having record heat
now. We definitely have not forgotten. Yeah,
yes, and now you have record heat.
Yes. And I think it's so important that we start to come together as these strong red states and our attorney generals to say that we're not going to allow for this Green New Deal agenda to be pushed down our throats. Look, the American people want to be able to live in their houses. They want to be able to heat their houses when they want to. They want to be able to cool themselves when they want to. And they don't want these intellectual elites on either side of the coast or wherever to be able to try to control what happens in their house, with their cars, what they can eat, what type of appliances they have. So I think that you're going to see a revolution of the mindset here in America in this 2024 election cycle.
You know, I see it shaping up, and I give Jesse Waters credit for this because he said it's really the battle now. What we're seeing shape up is the elites versus the normies, the normal people, the people who just want to, you know, get an education, find a career, live their life, make their money, get married, have a family if you want, you know, and just be left alone. And that's what it's coming down to. Do you see it the same way?
Yes, I think the American people want folks that are going to do what the Constitution says, to serve them and to set the conditions for their success, not try to implement some type of tyrannical Marxist agenda against them. And look, progressive has nothing to do with Republican or Democrat. You have folks that are progressive that are Republicans because it's all about the relationship between the individual and the institution of government. And we have got to set that relationship back in the right balance where the individual is superior, supreme, and sovereign over the institution of government.
Absolutely. Now, tell us what you're doing June 6th.
Oh, wow. I mean, you know, with Memorial Day and everything, I'll be jumping into Normandy actually on June the 5th. And it's just an incredible experience. 80 years, the anniversary, and I'll be jumping out of C-47 aircraft that actually flew our paratroopers 80 years ago. So I get chills thinking about it.
That is unbelievable. Better you than me, because I see no reason to jump out of a perfectly good airplane unless someone's forcing me to. But kudos to you. When was the last time you jumped?
Well, I had to go back through my refresher training in March of this year, but the last time I had jumped was 2002.
All right. And you're just excited.
Yeah, I'm excited. Look, as long as you remember your training, and like I said, you keep your feet and knees together, you'll be fine.
All right. Well, best of luck to you. And I'm going to have to get you back and we'll talk about it. I want to hear all about it. I want to see pictures, the whole bit. So Lieutenant Colonel Alan West, thank you so much for your time. Keep kicking butt in Texas. We do appreciate it, and have a wonderful time in Normandy.
Thank you. God bless. Thanks so much, Mary.
God bless. Have a great weekend. Coming up, Lieutenant Colonel Jim Whaley will be joining us. He is with the CEO of Mission Roll Call, and we're going to talk about how they honor the sacrifices of our fallen heroes, both here and abroad. So we're going to do that coming up after the bottom of the hour. I'm Mary Walter. More coming up on the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Giving you everything you need to know. You're with Brian Kilmeade. Fox News Radio on demand on the Fox News app. Download the app and just click listen. When you swipe left, you can listen to your favorite Fox News talk shows live. Swipe right for the latest Fox News Radio newscasts on demand. Fox News Radio on the Fox News app. Download it today.
Out of the gates and ready to go. Hey, it's Hutton Withrow. Hot Mike is here on the Outkick Network. We've got your afternoon covered with the latest sports discussion, and it's available wherever you find your audio.
Daily analysis and news. He is hot. I am Mike. Actually, my name is Chad.
His name is Jonathan, but you get the picture. We're going to bring it every single day. Whatever you want to call us, we'll respond to. We just want you to respond to what we're dishing out every day.
And while you're here, we hope you subscribe to the podcast, like, subscribe, and share.
The more you listen, the more you'll know. It's Brian Kilmeade.
The contrast between Democrats and Republicans is clear today and will be even clearer in November. Democrats want to fix the border and get something done. Republicans want to give speeches, let the border fester, and do absolutely nothing to fix the problem. They think it's a smart political strategy, but they're wrong. Now, Democrats will continue to keep trying to fix our border problem. It's too important for our national security, our communities, and our country.
Oh, Chucky Schmucky Schumer, methinks you tell a fib. I'm Mary Walter, in for Brian Kilmeade. So, yeah, I also misspoke when we were just speaking with Lieutenant Colonel Alan West. I said that the two illegals who would try to get in to Quantico were Turkish. They were Jordanian. So sorry about that. That was my bad. I also found a poll, Rasmussen. I thought this was so interesting. Rasmussen found that 54% of likely U.S. voters said that they support a policy to deport every single illegal immigrant in this country. We don't know how many there are. There'll be between 11 and 22 million people in this country illegally. And I thought it was so interesting to find out that the number is that high. And I wonder if it's that high because the left is overplaying their hand, and they do it a lot. But I do think they're smart. Yes, they overplay their hand. You can usually count on them to do that. But they know that if they push and push and push and push and push, they won't get everything they want, but they'll get some of what they want. Whereas the Republicans are totally the opposite. You know, Republicans just don't stick together. They don't push for anything, and they make me crazy, which is why I'm not a registered Republican. I had dinner with some people who are prominent Republicans, and they asked, when they found out I wasn't a registered Republican, they couldn't believe it. They said, why? And I said, because I don't sign up for a team that doesn't play to win. And you guys don't play to win. There's a lot of high road taking, which is fantastic. That's great. But when your opponent isn't taking the high road and your opponent is doing everything they can to win, even if it's just a little bit, even if they get just one rule changed or one law changed when they try to get 20, that's a win for them and they know it. And unfortunately, Republicans don't do that. Now, it also turns out that if you are working or lower middle class Americans, those are the people who are most likely to have to compete against illegals for jobs. Nearly 60% of those voters who are not college educated said that they support deporting illegal aliens. Now, the wealthier you are, if you make $200,000 or more, you don't support this at all. Now, do I think this is going to happen? I don't. And I think the people who walk into this country illegally don't think that they're ever going to get deported. They don't think they're ever going to have to show up for their immigration hearing. And they're eventually going to be given amnesty and they're going to be put on the path to citizenship, which is what the Democrats want. Where, again, this is where Democrats play to win. If you try to deport anybody, they're going to be screaming and yelling. That's the way it's going to go, unfortunately. Okay, coming up, Lieutenant Colonel Jim Whaley joins us. We're going to talk about Memorial Day and Mission Roll Call. That's next on the Brian Kilmeade Show.
If you're interested in it, Brian's talking about it. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
I have come tonight to talk about solving problems. The simple fact is Joe Biden is not getting the job done for the Bronx. He's not getting the job done for New York. And he's not getting the job done for America. He is incompetent, ladies and gentlemen. He is grossly incompetent. I have the job done as I did for 4 years, and I will get it done fast.
Who said we're not going to win New York? We're going to win New York so fast.
That, I'm sure you recognize that voice, that one Donald J. Trump in the Bronx yesterday. I didn't know how I was going to talk because it poured yesterday. Oh, my gosh. The weather was horrific yesterday morning. And things were flooded out. The trains weren't running. We just got a deluge super, super fast. But I knew people would turn out anyway to see Donald Trump. I knew. I knew in the Bronx. And the venue, the park that they were in, they said could only hold about 3,000 people. But there were reports depending. I don't know if there's been an official count from the police department yet. But there were counts of over 10,000 people that showed up. Now, I don't know if you got a chance. While I was watching it during Brett Baer's show last night, and what I thought was so interesting in Donald Trump versus Joe Biden. When was the last time we heard Joe Biden give a speech? Was at Morehouse College, and Joe Biden at Morehouse College he talks like this. Like, he's not energetic. You could barely hear him when he speaks because he's talking like this and he's really low and he sounds very tired. And here's Donald Trump, full of energy. It was such an incredible dichotomy, but it wasn't just the tone and the enthusiasm. Joe Biden brings no enthusiasm. He brings no excitement. But when you look at the content of the two, to me, it was so striking, the difference. Joe Biden was telling this group of young black men graduating from Morehouse College. I didn't realize it was a college just for men. And here he's telling them about how terrible their life is going to be, what an awful country America is. He talks about how terrible democracy is, but then they turn around and tell us that they have to preserve democracy. So, which I thought was very interesting because you just got finished telling me how terrible democracy is, how horrible it is, how as black men in America, they're going to get beat in the street by cops. It was and a graduation speech is supposed to be uplifting. A graduation speech is supposed to be positive and tell you, you know, you're supposed to be excited and you're going out into the world and you're going to start your first job and it's going to be great. And that was none of that from Joe Biden. If you want to jump in, 866-408-7669, 866-408-7669. If you just want to tell me if you watched it, maybe you were there, what was it like? I love these things. I've never been to a Trump rally, but because I'm claustrophobic and there's just too many people. And so thank you. I'll watch on TV. But the difference in the message to me was really just summed up. I would love to play like Donald Trump and then a piece of Biden and then Donald Trump and a piece of Biden. And it's such different views of America. And I don't know, but I kind of prefer the guy who's got a little bit of hope as opposed to the other guy who wants me to reelect him so he can tell me about how terrible the country is for the next 4 years. Tell me what you're doing to change it. Nothing. He didn't have anything. So Lawrence Jones had the opportunity to interview Trump while he was in the Bronx. It's a little hard to hear because I think the village people are in the background of this one. But Donald Trump talking about, you know, all of this and how he's taking on the road. And it's a positive message.
Do you think the Republican Party can win here with other seats? The city, can you take over the city council, the mayor's office, the governor's office?
Well, I don't know about other races. I think we can win New York as a presidential candidate because I have a special relationship.
How do you take this energy on the road? How do you? Are you going to go to Atlanta?
Well, it's on the road for me. We have the largest crowds we've ever had. Look, we won the first time, and we got many millions more votes the second time. In 2016, we won. We beat Hillary. In 2020, we got millions more votes. We did better in 2020. Nobody likes talking about it. We got, that's by their count. We got millions of more votes. I will say this, as good as 2016 and 2020 were, it's nothing compared to what's happening now. And you see that.
Yeah. It's we've got energy. We're going to take this energy on the road. I love that Donald Trump is going to neighborhoods where they've never gone before. Republicans have never gone before. And I think that that's super important. Let's go to some of the attendees. Can we go to cut five? These are attendees, people who were in the Bronx, and they were talking to Alexis McAdams and telling her why they are supporting Donald Trump. Why are they out there? Because remember, this is blue, 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 blue New York. And these people, for most of their lives, most of them have probably voted Democrat. And now here they are. Supporting Donald Trump. Why?
It's been 100 years since the Bronx voted for a Republican presidential candidate. Is that going to change this year?
It absolutely will. You know, this, a lot of times people take things for granted. People thought that Hillary was going to clinch the presidency in a coronation, and that didn't happen. So there's always room for surprises.
It's time for a change in leadership. We've been voting down the same party for years now, and nothing has changed. Things have gotten out of control. We're dealing with housing situations. We're dealing with homelessness, the mentally ill, crimes. There's a lot happening here. Inflation.
I've always been raised to think a certain way. And, you know, for me to come and think Republican and think Donald Trump and say it's time to right a wrong for him, it's time to right that wrong that they're doing to him, that's coming from the heart.
See? The lawfare backfiring on the Democrats. I think a lot of people across America see what is happening and they don't like it. And I also think they're tired of it. I think there's a certain weariness of the lawsuit after lawsuit after lawsuit with Trump. We're like, yeah, we get it. And people are starting to just say, enough, we've had it. If they can do that to Trump, they can do that to me. And I think that that sentiment is growing. All right, I've got so much more coming up on Donald Trump in the Bronx and your phone calls at 866-408-7669. You can also hit me up on X at Mary Walter Radio, no S, Mary Walter Radio, and I'll get those comments as well. I'm Mary Walter in for Brian Kilmeade.
Politics, current events, and news that affects you. Brian's got a lot more to say. Stay with Brian Kilmeade. Radio that makes you think. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
I'm Mary Walter in for Brian Kilmeade. We're talking about Memorial Day today. We're just speaking with Lieutenant Colonel Alan West. And want to talk to Lieutenant Colonel Jim Whaley. He's the CEO of Mission Roll Call, and he is a U.S. Army veteran, 20 years retired Lieutenant Colonel. Sir, thank you for joining me here on the Brian Kilmeade Show.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. Let's talk about Mission Roll Call. You know, you are an advocacy group. There's a lot of advocacy groups out there for vets. What makes Mission Roll Call different?
Yeah, great question. I think what makes us different is we are the voice of the American veteran, unfiltered. So through a series of polls and outreach, we listen to the American veteran, their family members, their caregivers, in a way that gives their voice in an unfiltered way. So then we can use their voice to talk to great media folks like you, but also to go to Congress and Senate and say, this is what your constituency is saying. Listen to them. And we think that will help educate a lot of people of what veterans need. Right now, we have about 18 million veterans in our country, half of which are not associated with any veteran support organization or even registered with the VA.
You know, I find that interesting, and I saw that on your page, which, by the way, it's missionrollcall.org. If you are a vet and you're interested, I strongly recommend you look it up. But there is a VFW near us, and it just closed. The VFW closed in a beautiful building, and they closed. Vets don't seem to be coalescing or joining groups, and I think it's a generational thing. I think that the younger generation is probably not, you know, millennial and younger. They're not joiners. They just don't seem to be joiners, period. They're not big on volunteering in general, not all of them, and they're not joiners. Is it a generational issue as to why they don't affiliate with service programs?
Yeah, I mean, we see that, you know, in a couple of years, post-9/11 veterans will be the majority of the veterans in our country. And they get involved in the community in a different way. And going to the local VFW hall or the American Legion, it doesn't really resonate with them. They want to volunteer. They want to be involved on their own terms. And that's through the use of social media, getting together, doing things in smaller groups and getting involved in the community. There still is that great current with veterans to get involved, to continue to serve their country, yeah, to be involved with things like coaching and mentorship and helping other veterans. So that has not changed. And that continues to be a driving force for all veterans. But we're trying to reach them through the use of mobile devices, right, and through the use of social media in a way that not only asks them to get involved, but provides them information about how do you do an interview? How do you make a transition to corporate America? Or how do you start a business? How do you become an entrepreneur? How do you make a claim with the VA? We have about 200,000 veterans leaving service every year, and all the services do a horrible job in transitioning veterans, soldiers, airmen, Marines out of the service. They do a wonderful job getting them in. Getting them out is not something they're very good at.
It's so interesting that you brought that up, because I was going to ask you that about the transitioning from military life to civilian life being very difficult. It's a hard thing to do. And I think it ties in with something that a spotlight has been shown on, which I think is important, which is a suicide rate among veterans. It's higher than the general population. Is that right? One of the contributing factors to that is that they can't find their way back into society in a way that works for them?
Yeah, it's a terrible statistic when we say that we've lost more veterans to suicide than we did on the war on terror. There's a couple contributing factors to that horrible number. One is when they leave the service, they leave that sense of being part of something bigger than themselves, that tribe, that group of people that look out for each other, come from different walks of life, but they wear the same uniform, and they're usually doing a mission that brings them together in a very emotional and physical way. Then they get out, and their transition doesn't go well, and they find a job, not a profession. So they lose that sense of calling to do something bigger than themselves, and they've lost their tribe. So now they're back in a small town, and no one understands what they're talking about. They're speaking a different language, so to speak, right? They're using acronyms. They're talking about their service, and very few people understand that. We really need a national effort that helps veterans and combines that in a private-public process so that companies hire veterans and understand the value that they bring. They bring great skills. They bring loyalty. They're going to show up to work. They're going to work with others. They're going to volunteer in their community. They're going to make an impact. But a lot of companies look at veterans and say, well, maybe they're just very rigid in their process. Maybe they have some issues we don't want to deal with. And so we really need a national effort. And I hope that comes up in the upcoming campaign, that folks talk about that, because all of our companies, all of our Fortune 500 companies benefit from the fact that we have a strong military.
Yeah, no, absolutely. But as you were speaking about that, and you're talking about losing their tribe, I go back to the VFW that just closed. To me, that's a place to find your tribe. It's kind of like their version of Cheers. You walk in, everybody knows your name. Everybody understands your experience. So to me, that seems to be something that would be encouraged, even though this younger generation doesn't really socialize in bars and things like that.
Yeah, and I think that there's a bit of a chasm between the ones that are at the VFW and the American Legion than this new generation that is out getting out of service, and there's not a lot of commonality there. They also, I think, want to be more active in the community. They want to go out and do things. So when I think about there's a lot of great VSOs that are doing that. You think about Team Rubicon that goes out and uses veterans for disaster relief. You think about Mission Continues that does things that gets veterans involved in the community and continues that mission. So there's a lot of great organizations, and we're trying through Mission Roll Call to help connect all that, to use our website and our abilities to provide a hub so that veterans can find what is their niche, what's going to make them connect back to the community in a powerful way. And I will say there's a tremendous amount of veterans that have made a transition on their own. You know, they're in corporate America, they're Fortune 500 CEOs, they're entrepreneurs, they're coaches, they're mentors, they're police officers and firemen. They're the fabric of our nation. But we're letting too many get through the net that are not. And that's what we're trying to connect all that and provide that environment that connects all those people in a thoughtful way that energizes them to get back and to continue their service to their country. That doesn't lose – veterans don't lose that pride in their nation, want to continue to serve their country. They don't lose that the day they take off the uniform.
Right. No, I absolutely agree with you, and I understand that. There seem to be a lot of organizations out there. You see advertisements all the time. As you said, there's organizations that do different things. And so you, if I understand correctly, you said you're the hub. So if a veteran comes to missionrollcall.org and they want to find something that benefits them for their thing, is that where you're kind of like the clearinghouse that they can go to and say, oh, this organization over here would be better for me for this, or this one would be better for me for that?
Right. We're trying to connect veterans to the right organizations, and that could be us, that could be someone else. But we think, and we're going to be launching a new website soon that's going to be even more interactive to allow that to happen. But our membership's free. Anybody can join. Veteran, spouse, brother, son, daughter, mom or dad, or caregiver to get involved. We think the voice of the American veterans is very important, and that our nation needs to hear from them. Less than 1% of our country serves, yet it plays a vital role in making sure that we enjoy the life and the freedoms that we have. And even anyone that picks up a newspaper or listens to the news understands that the world is not getting safer. And we need to make sure that we take care of veterans, because I think that issues that affect veterans also affect our recruitment issues.
Of course.
Right? So if we're not taking care of veterans and we're not helping them transition, we're not taking care of them while active duty. And I'll make a point, 24% of all active duty have food insecurity issues.
Yeah.
So we're not paying active duty to be able to function.
Yeah, that's just a crime. And those are the things that I really like the light being shown on. Those are the things, because I think regardless of where you stand politically, that's something that is outrageous to every American. Lieutenant Colonel Jim Whaley, thank you for the work that you're doing. It's missionrollcall.org. Check them out, especially if you are a veteran.
News radio studios in Midtown Manhattan. It's the fastest growing radio talk show. Brian Kilmeade.
I'm Mary Walter in for Brian Kilmeade. So much to talk about, but a big story that kind of was a blip on the radar: Graceland up for sale. Apparently, there's a loan that was taken out and wasn't repaid, and it's a little hinky. So to straighten it out for us is Brian Brenberg, co-host of The Big Money Show, weekdays 1 o'clock Eastern Time on Fox Business. Find him on X at Brian Brenberg. Well, that's easy. Brian, welcome to the show. Thank you for joining me.
You bet, Mary. Thanks for having me.
So what happened with Graceland? So from what I understand, his daughter, Lisa Marie Presley, used Graceland as collateral in a loan for almost $4 million, and she died. And then nobody knew that a deal existed, apparently. And all of a sudden, this company comes up and says, oh, yeah, we're taking Graceland because you defaulted on your loan.
Yeah, I mean, first of all, I don't know what we know, actually, Mary. That's the crazy part about this, because the company, whoever this company is, alleged that they had a loan to Lisa Marie. But, you know, to have a loan, you got to have documentation for it. You've got to have somebody who signed for it. And what happened is when that documentation was produced, Lisa Marie's daughter said, this isn't her signature. This is not her on this document. This is a fraudulent document. And so that's when the courts got involved and said, does this company who alleges this loan exist? And what's crazy is they went out to try to find the guys, you know, went out to look for their website, their contact information. And when they did that, they couldn't find really anything. I mean, they were sort of nowhere to be found. So that's when everybody's antenna went up And the judge said, okay, slow down. This is Graceland. You know, this is not just your everyday home. And I'm not seeing a lot of data that tells me that this loan and this claim is real. So we've got to hit pause. And that's where we really stand essentially right now. The judge said this looks bad for the guys who alleged there was a loan. And those guys so far haven't produced anything that says, no, this is legit. So it looks like Graceland's going to remain Presley Graceland. We'll see.
It's to me so crazy, but I also love that since this is Graceland, we're going to hit pause. Like if this was your house or my house, the judge would have been like, oh, well, you know, prove that it's
well,
not legit.
That is kind of scary, isn't it? Because the judge did say we need to slow down. This is Graceland, which I appreciate. I think we should slow down always if we don't know, frankly, if it's my house or if it's Graceland. But it kind of it does give you a window into what can go wrong at inheritance time. It can give you a window into the pretty, you know, somewhat sophisticated, maybe unsophisticated attempts at fraud, attempts to fabricate things to look like somebody's got a claim on your property. And I got to tell you, that's only going to get more problematic in the era of AI because forget about faking signatures. We're going to fake voices, images, conversations and ways that to the naked ear or eye you can't discern. So in some ways this is bigger than Elvis in Graceland. It's a get ready for what might be coming when it comes to how inheritance gets transferred and how assets get passed.
Wow. So I think clearly we need some laws because it's not only this reminded me so much of the explosion of people who move into your house and if they live there for 30 days it's theirs. Which to me is insane. Well, you know, I had a DoorDash delivery and look, I was here a month ago and they delivered it here. So I get to stay. And in a lot of these states, especially the blue states, if you have a house that you're renovating or it's for sale and it's sitting on the market and there's no one in it and somebody moves in, you can't get them out. So there's a lot of fraud going on with housing and with homes, it seems. And
that's people's biggest asset. I mean, it matters because for a lot of people that is their nest egg, that is their treasure, that's what they're counting on, whether they're going to live in it or they're going to sell it at some point and retire on some of those proceeds. And you're absolutely right, our laws, I mean, I don't think anybody really had a good sense of this until recently as we started to see this, but the laws on squatters and the rights that property owners have or don't have look kind of insane to the average person. I mean, how can you let somebody walk into my house and set up shop and then start to say they've got rights to do that?
Yeah.
So I don't know if, you know, I'm not a legal guy. Look, I'm not a lawyer, but it seems to me the bias in a lot of these laws has gone away from the property owner. And in a world of AI and in a world of people who are willing to really brazenly try to take your stuff, I wonder if we need to shift the balance of power back to the property owners and put a bigger burden on those who want to claim that property. Seems kind of intuitive to me, frankly, Mary,
but it
seems like we got to do that because it's not happening right now.
No, it's not. And this goes into the other part of another issue, too, is where I had no idea, like someone could have a lien on your property and you don't even know it. All of this fraud. Which is a big problem. But I want to get into, let's go back to this Graceland if we can.
Yeah.
So because you work on the business side of things, this is your jam, this is what you do. I'm sure that when it comes to wills, when it comes to estates, whether it's big or small, when you get involved with family dynamics, I think things can go sideways really, really quickly, right? Like, and I know families, and my husband is a doctor, and so he's in the hospital a lot. And just even when it comes to care, like people are like, oh, you weren't around to see mom at all, and now you come in and you want to make all the decisions. The same thing then bleeds over into the quote unquote estate, and there doesn't even have to be a lot there, right? People
no.
just fight over it.
The sad reality is when it comes to businesses being passed along or inheritance being passed along, probably the hardest people to deal with are family. And I hate to say it, but it's true because, and here's why, let me tell you why. You know, there's a saying, good fences make good neighbors. you know, when you define your boundaries well, you know how to get along, right? And that's true. In families, a lot of times what happens is people say, well, we're family. We don't need to define the boundaries. We don't need the fences. We'll just figure it out together because we've been together our whole lives. That's a recipe for disaster. Even if you're family, you can have very different expectations of what fair is or what right is or who should get what, how, when. And so it's doubly important to me when you're talking about a family dynamic to get those fences in place right away. Know who the executor is of that will. You got to know how things are going to be allocated. Who's going to be responsible for what? Put it in a will. Put it in writing. Make sure everybody's got it. It's documented so that when it finally ends up in the state where you got to figure out what to do, it's already spelled out for you. Families need boundaries maybe more than any kind of relationship because without them, things blur too quickly. Now, Graceland's a little different. I don't, you know, to me, I don't know that it's a, that question isn't the precipitating question right here.
Right.
But it can be anytime you get a situation like this.
Because it's just Riley Keough. It's just her daughter.
Right.
There's really no one else. And the estate is in, that estate is in a trust because it's an actual estate. When we talk about estate, for most of us on the outside looking in, you wouldn't look at it and go, oh, that's an estate. You
know? Right. Right.
Because I see it in family, not my immediate family, but you know, cousins and other family members where things have gone sideways because someone, you know, said, oh, well, your mom left you the house. Why did she leave you the house? And he's like, well, I was living with her and taking care of her and you weren't.
Yes.
That stuff happens. You know, we downsized my parents and I knew where I stood when I got the Yankee Candle that my mother had only burned a third of the way and couldn't part with it. And I got that. And I was like, okay, I know where this is going. You know, that was the family heirloom that I got was the third burned Yankee Candle. And that's a true story. That's absolutely true. I called my brothers and I said, I just want to let you know I'm burning the family heirloom.
You know what? I got to tell you though, it's great to get inheritance. People work hard all their lives to leave something to their kids and grandkids, and that's wonderful, and you should do that. But there is something a little freeing about, like, the only thing left is a Yankee Candle. I mean, there's no fighting over that, right? There's no big disputes. Nobody's like, hey, I got really ripped off in this. I mean, nobody got ripped off. Everybody got ripped off because there was nothing left. I suppose that's sort of a sad situation, but families – families are not the magic solution to resolving complicated things. That's the magic solution is thinking through those things ahead of time, and even families got to do that.
No, absolutely. And listen, my parents are living their best life. God bless them. They had a personal trainer starting in, like, I want to say their 40s, and they got that personal trainer into their 80s.
Whoa.
Right? Good for them, right? They're up, they're moving, they're traveling. It's fantastic. I have no problem with that whatsoever. And if all is left is the Yankee Candle, I'm okay with that. That's fine. But what I do find hilarious is that my brother just stopped by and said, they downsized my parents because I don't live near them. And if I tell my mother to throw something out, she's going to keep it.
Uh-huh.
So that would not, it's just that wouldn't help. So he shows up, he goes, I got some stuff for you from mom and dad. And he literally, I kid you not, dumped an SUV worth of junk in my driveway, including the 1/3 burned Yankee Candle and beat feet. And he was gone. I was just like, I can't believe you just did that. He's like, that you got to take stuff. We all took stuff. Like, no.
Well, see, it's a little bit of might makes right, too. You know, like whoever's got the truck and can dump the stuff is going to win that battle.
My husband came home. He's like, what is this? I'm like, you're never going to believe it.
Your inheritance. Congratulations.
This is what I'm bringing to the marriage, honey.
That's hilarious.
Brian Brenberg, thank you so much for joining me. A lot of fun. I appreciate it. And such a good message. So many people get it all hammered out beforehand, especially if you don't have a will. You never know. I don't care. As soon as you start to accumulate stuff, I don't care if you're, you know, in your 30s, you really should have a will of some kind that spells it all out. Make sure everybody knows.
Do it ahead of time. Good fences make good family, just like neighbors. That's my
takeaway. Oh, I like that. And especially if they're electrified. Brian, have a wonderful weekend. Thank you so much for joining me. 866-408-7669 is my number. I'm just curious. When it comes to things like this, have you had any experience with this? You know, we're downsizing my parents. You know, they had this big house. My brothers had them sell it during COVID. They got really good price for it. They sold at the peak, which was fantastic. Good for them. And they slowly moved them into an extended living facility where they're very independent. They have their own place. They're independent. It's just smaller. And if they need anything, there's someone there to help them, as opposed to one of us having to drop everything and run at any given moment. But for the most part, things are really out in the open, and you know, everybody knows what to expect or not expect. Like I said, I peaked with the Yankee candle. But I do know family where there's fighting over who got the house. And now they're fighting over it. And, you know, people probably should have been informed ahead of time so that there could be a discussion. But I don't think older people want to talk about it. I don't know. So anything like this that you want to share, does this sound familiar to anybody? 866-408-7669. I'm Mary Walter, and you're listening to The Brian Kilmeade Show.
Learning something new every day on The Brian Kilmeade Show. Breaking news, unique opinions. Hear it all on The Brian Kilmeade Show.
Mary Walter in for Brian Kilmeade. Don't forget, you can get in touch with me on X. You can leave your comments there, and I'll try to get to them and get them on the air for you. Just look for Mary Walter Radio. And I do have a podcast on Tuesdays. It is live on YouTube and Getter. Look for Mary Walter Radio. You can participate. Lieutenant Colonel Alan West, frequent guest on that podcast, as well as others. And sometimes we don't have any guests at all. It's just you guys. And you know, we have a good time, and sometimes they don't even talk politics. The audio is available on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. Again, look for Mary Walter Radio. So we were just speaking with Brian Brenberg from Fox Business about Graceland and this weird thing about what's happening, and whether this is fraud with someone trying to steal Graceland with a fake document saying that Lisa Marie Presley used Graceland as collateral for an almost $4 million loan. And then when challenged, like, oh, and now we can't even find the guys. Kind of weird. But inheritances, when it comes to family, I know for a fact weird stuff happens, like the Yankee candle, which my parents aren't dead. But, you know, if the Yankee candle is a glimpse into what's coming down the pike, I'm prepared for it. Like, I pretty much know where we're going. All right, let's go to Dennis in Florida. Dennis, welcome. You are on the Brian Kilmeade Show. Hi.
Hi. Thanks for taking the call. I appreciate it. Sure. I totally concur with you on some of this stuff. You don't have to die to be in a nightmare in your senior years. And it's true. It's like, it's tragic too. These are the World War II generation who gave it all for their family, their kids, the generations after them. And this is how they get used, abused, and misused through our current system. And yeah. I'm a court official. I'm a trustee of the family trust. This is a big concern of mine. I'm also an author and a scholar. And I happened to tune in this morning and listen to your show and thought I have to call you.
Well, I'm glad you did. But, you know, here's the thing. This is why I think it's so important for kids to be involved with their parents, you know, when it comes to this. You know, my father, electrical engineer, but he didn't really grow up with computers, right? And he was good with computers when they first came out. He was totally into them and the whole bit. Now he's always complaining that his handheld computer, which is his phone, isn't working. There's something wrong with it. And we're like, no, you're what's wrong with it. And, you know, you worry about him doing something. So the phone's now been restricted to just making phone calls because, you know, you worry about him giving everything to a Nigerian prince who's going to give him a better return for his money than he would by putting it in the bank, you know?
Yes, I agree. There's so many schemes and scams and frauds in the culture, including the family members as well.
Yeah.
I think it's real good. I mean, guardianship now has become a license to steal in the courts, probate courts particularly. I'm very aware of this, and I've written about it, and I've written how to fight it. And I'm a person who believes in leaning people who harm other people and proceed accordingly, either to settle, to trial, or whatever.
Right. Well, it's so interesting.
I think you'll hear more about this.
Yeah, no, I appreciate you giving us a call. Thank you so much, Dennis. The whole guardianship thing now, and it's sad because there's some people who don't have guardians. And I have a friend in New Jersey who actually volunteers to be a guardian for people who don't have guardians. I never knew that that was a thing, but apparently it is. So that to me is interesting as well. Cam, if you'd like to hang on, I will get to you on the other side here because I don't have a ton of time and I want you to be able to talk about this. And have you had a conversation with your family members so that you know what's coming? You know where everything is going, so that there aren't fights afterwards. And there isn't, because I've seen situations where there is infighting that goes on for years and years and years about what was left to whom or what wasn't left. And then there's nothing left, period. Nothing left. And you can use a different name. No one will know who you are. I'm Mary Walter, and you're listening to The Brian Kilmeade Show.
Fastest 3 hours in radio. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
I'm Mary Walter sitting in for Brian Kilmeade. 866-408-7669. You can reach out to me on X at Mary Walter Radio. There is no S in that. So we were just talking with Brian Brenberg about Graceland and what happened there and how, you know, the family almost lost Graceland. And it looks like there may be something hinky going on with a claim that Lisa Marie Presley took out a loan and used Graceland as collateral before she died. But it doesn't look like the whole thing is legit, but it led to a conversation about what happens in families when it comes to inheritances. You know, if you've been there, do you have any tips? Like if you could go back and do it again, you know, what do you wish was done differently? And do you just split? And I had this conversation with my godmother about whether to split everything evenly. And she said that she wasn't going to split everything evenly because one of her sons was living with her. And so she's going to leave him the house, but he was also helping her. He was doing all the yard work. He was doing this. He was doing that. And one of the other sons was very jealous about that and very resentful about the whole thing. And she's like, yeah, well, you went to college. He didn't. And so you have, I think these conversations are good to have before. And what about if you have young kids? Do you set up a trust? Do you do something along those lines? 866-408-7669. Kim in Indiana, you're on the Brian Kilmeade Show. Hi, Kim.
Good morning, Mary. Hey, I'm in the midst of dealing with aging parents, one in very ill health. And my parents, they don't have a lot of money. They have just enough money that, you know, they're living a secure life, but there's not a lot of help for the caretaking parent other than me being the eldest child who is still living in the same town as them. The other children are out of town, out of state. And it's tough. I mean, I'm still, I'm in my mid-50s and I work and have my own household to take care of. But I would never give up the opportunity to be there for my parents and help them. But it is a conversation that needs to be had. And the earlier that it is had, the better off everybody is going to be. I don't want to guilt my siblings, but it would be nice if that, you know, hey, take a week's vacation and come here. And, you know, give dad a break, give me a break, whatever. But, you know, come down the line, I'm looking going, I'm the one here. I'm the one that's putting in the time. Right. I'm putting in the effort, the work. I'm the, you know, I'm the power of attorney. You know, And if something happens, like say to my dad, you know, God forbid he should fall over dead today or tomorrow, he's the primary caretaker for my mom. So then I'm thrown into a whirlwind right. of what do I do with her?
Yeah. And so see, it's when you have a situation where one person is doing the lion's share of the work, you know, your siblings, I think, would have to understand what's going to happen. But I think it's a conversation, since you do have elderly parents, that your parents need to have with each sibling, you know, and mm-hmm. then they need to sit down and say, hey, we're not getting any younger. It's an uncomfortable conversation to have, but I think it's better to have it beforehand than to have it afterwards. And, you know, one kid's sitting with a half burned Yankee candle and the other kid just got $1,000, right?
Right, right. Absolutely. You know? And it makes me see for my own future and my children that, you know, I'm now kind of thinking, okay, I need to quit holding on to things that,
yes.
you know, it only means something maybe to me. It may not necessarily mean anything to my kids.
Exactly.
And I don't want to leave them in the situation that when I pass, they're dealing with all right. of this stuff, because at the end of the day, it's just stuff.
100%. Yeah, my mother split up my grandmother's china. I don't know why. So I got the salt and pepper shaker with no thing on the bottom to hold the salt or pepper in it, the shaker, unless I like whittle down, I guess, a cork. So there's nothing
right.
in there. And I got a cup and a saucer and one plate. Uh-huh. I'm like, well, what do I do with this?
Right.
Because it's not a full set, because she split it up, you know, between her sister and then my nieces and this and that. And I'm sure she thought she was doing a great thing. But I'm like, well, what do I do with this? So we started doing
right.
the same thing. Like, it was a huge lesson for us, because I have a guest room now that is just full of boxes of stuff that I now have to yeah. wade through. And so we're doing the same thing. I said to my husband, because my husband's a bit of a hoarder, I'm like, out. It's going. And somebody will buy your stuff. It's amazing how many people will buy what other people consider junk. So
right.
it's going. I'm doing it now while I'm young and I can do it. Plus, I don't have children to burden, which if I had children, I would just burden them with having to clean this up. I mean, that's why you have them, right? So you can make them do the stuff you don't want to do. So I
sure,
tell my nieces
sure.
and nephews all the time, someday this is all yours. And they're like, no.
Yeah, don't do it to us. Yeah,
Kim, thank you for sharing your story. Have a wonderful weekend. And thank you for joining me on the Brian Kilmeade Show. It's true. When somebody comes by and dumps an entire SUV full of stuff, like laundry baskets, for some reason, I got 3 laundry baskets from my parents. How many laundry baskets do you need? I got 3. I've just started giving them away because I had 3 laundry baskets. Pictures, my albums. I got every one of my parents' albums. My parents were hippies, apparently, because they have a double album with the double album cover with an insert into it on the songs of the humpback whales, with a book on the history of the humpback whales, because I guess they were endangered in the 70s. I don't know. But it is an album, I kid you not, of whale singing. It, hand to God, true. It's a riot. It's hilarious. And I love every minute of it. It's so much. It's so funny. But, you know, the younger generation, I love antiques. I loved getting, you know, my grandparents. I got my grandparents' albums. I have, you know, 1930s albums, the big heavy ones, like records, Bing Crosby. You know, I have their old record player. You have to hand crank it. That kind of stuff I love. But the generation after me, they don't even want pictures of their family. Like, they don't even want that. They want nothing. They want to live in a sterile box that is white and black and gray. And has no walls and very Soviet looking, very cold, in my opinion. It's not very homey. They're very, very cold places, it looks like. And no offense to IKEA, but they look like they're from IKEA, right? And they have no pictures. It's all very sterile and clean. There's nothing. There's no nostalgia. There's no family stuff. They don't want any of that stuff. So I'm looking at my nieces and nephews going, I ain't going to want this, you know, and I'm tossing and selling and out it goes. Because like I said, I don't have children to burden. So I don't think there's a piece of furniture in my house that's new. Everything came from relatives. This beautiful hand, you know, done furniture, this real wood, you know, handcrafted with dovetail, construct the whole bit. And they're like, yeah, we don't want it. It's old. I'm like, it's gorgeous. So I've all my furniture, almost all of it, was somebody else's. And why? You know, pay you $25 for a dresser online or spend, you know, $2,500 for brand new. So that's just me. All right, more of your calls coming up, 866-408-7669 on the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Diving deep into today's top stories, it's Brian Kilmeade. The talk show that's getting you talking. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
I'm Mary Walter, sitting in for Brian Kilmeade. And we're talking about inheritances and how you deal with it with your family. And I think the story from Graceland really brought it out. And maybe we'll spur some conversations within families. And that's a good thing. Let's head to Rick in St. Louis. Rick, you are on the Brian Kilmeade Show. Hi, welcome.
Thanks. I'm a salesman, but I'm not making a sales call here. But the lady that called in a few minutes ago that was taking care of her mother, of her parents, and the other siblings were out of town. And she was afraid, well, she's doing all the work now anyway, and she was afraid that maybe if her father died, she'd have to figure out how to take care of her mother on top of everything else she's doing. Well, don't hang up on me when I say this, but people in that situation should consider looking at the equity in the house and consider getting a reverse mortgage, because they could take equity out of the house, pay helpers, you know, bring helpers into the house, to the mom's house, to maybe take care of all the burden, and at least take care of a portion of the burden from the lady that lives in the same town. And what that really does is it takes some of the future inheritance from those kids that are living out of town, helping take care of mom right now. And it really takes a big burden off of the lady that called. That's all.
No, you know what? That's interesting, Rick. And I've heard about that. I've never looked into them, and so I don't know much about them at all. But there is, you know, and there's always been a sandwich generation, especially since women started working, right? So you wind up, you go from taking care of your kids to taking, and you have a couple of years in there, and you're watching, then you start watching the grandkids. Then you wind up taking care of your parents. And it usually falls to the oldest daughter. That's just the way it is. And now that women are working more and women are back in the workplace more, you have that's not necessarily an option, and people are scrambling. So yeah, maybe that is an option for her. Thank you, Rick. I appreciate you joining me. Like I said, I don't know a ton about them, but I know for some people maybe that's a good option, and maybe that's something you need to look at. You know, the other thing is if you have an HSA, all that money that you put in over the years and you have in your HSA, when you get older, that can be used for nursing and having aides come into your home when you get older. And I know a lot of people don't have HSAs, but I've always thought that they're fantastic. And just for that reason, that if you save the money, you start when you're younger and you save it, it could be a very good resource for you. Let's head to Ronell, listening in Jacksonville, Florida on WOKV. Ronell, welcome. You are on the Brian Kilmeade Show. Hi.
Hey, thank you very much. I am recently dealing with all of this. My father passed away in April. Wait a minute. And he had a blended family. Mm-hmm. And his wife and my father's biological children do not get along with each other. Too long of a story to go into, but there is no love lost.
Okay.
On either party.
Right.
So my father has passed away. In the will, it's supposed to be split in four pieces of the pie, so to speak.
Okay.
Talking with my father previously, years ago, you know, I'm not interested necessarily in your money, but how do you have the will set up? Because now he has passed. The will is not being carried out as his wishes. It's
there is an executor. I would assume that the will was put together by a lawyer, that you had a professional put the will together, and there is an executor. And if the will is not being carried out the way it is written, then there are legal recourse there. But this is what happens. This is what we're talking about, you know? I'm a big fan. Not everybody's like me. I'm just, when it comes to stuff like this, I'm super easygoing. I work my whole life. I'm fine. Would it be great to get an inheritance? Of course it would. But if my parents choose to give it all to one sibling, well, that was their choice. What am I going to do about it, right? You know, oh, well, it is what it is. I can't get upset.
Totally understandable. My, and I'm with you. like I said, I told my father, I'm not interested in your money.
Right.
What I would like is, you know, I have a small urn, which I know is gross, but I mean, it's a tablespoon of ashes. So I have something of him.
Yeah. You know, and I think that's terrible what you're going through, and that would mean something to you. On the other hand, I just look at it like I have a lifetime of memories. So, you know, having a spoonful of ashes, is that really going to change all those memories? Is that going to take, if I don't have that, will it take those memories away from me? It won't. So if you can take some comfort in that, if they're going to be vindictive and petty, there's nothing you can do about that. But if the will is not being carried out the way it should be carried out, legally written down, then you have some recourse. Rennell, I'm so sorry for your loss. Obviously, it's still hurting you very deeply. And I hope that, you know, all those wonderful memories, you know, can help your heart to heal down the road. Maybe bring a smile to your face. Let's quickly go to David in Knoxville. David, you are on the Brian Kilmeade Show. Hi.
Hello, how are you?
I'm doing good. Go ahead.
Okay, I'm going to try to summarize this, but I'd kind of like to know if I still can do, if there's a statute of limitations and if I can still contest this.
I don't know.
My parents, yeah, I know right now, but my parents, a stepfather, had three children that ended up in the probate situation. Now, my mother had bought the house on her own because they had been separated. She decided to buy the house. She passed first. She was a lot younger than my stepfather. He never probated anything. He had to get onto the reverse mortgage through a quick mm-hmm. deed because they won't let one person do it by themselves.
Right.
So when it came to his passing, the neighbors knew that that house was supposed to go to me. My mom's will said all her stuff goes to me. He made all the money at the time, and his stuff would go to his kids. Now, come into the picture, he's on the house because of the quick deed. Now, I ended up having to do all the running, all the stuff, get in storage, put stuff in, get the house for sale. The person handling the estate was in New York. I'm in Tennessee. The house was in Georgia. Two others were Kansas and Colorado. They all have houses. They all have kids.
Right.
I've just gone through a divorce. I've got nothing.
Quickly.
Starting over.
Quickly.
Yes. So I ended up having to split the house proceeds.
Okay.
When he had a gambling issue, he can never
okay,
paid
so,
on the
but,
reverse mortgage
right.
and actually even borrowed against it,
yeah.
which we lost money on. So
yeah, it sounds very complicated, and you know, we can't really go through it. We can't litigate it here. You know, I watch a lot of Judge Judy, but I'm not a lawyer. But these are the things to just, you know, listen, that was so complicated and convoluted, and there's so many moving parts. It just goes to show what happens when the kids get involved. And their spouses and the whole thing. You've got a lot of it. You know, listen, my in-laws have a vacation home. Thank you, Bob. Have a vacation home. And they formed an LLC, and it's only their children. The spouses are not involved in it. You know, we have no say in the operation of that house, which is fine with me. And I tell my husband I'm also not paying the taxes. So you can pay your share out of your money since I have no say in that house. And, you know, they have the whole thing worked out that if somebody wants to leave, the other siblings have to buy them out at fair market value. They have to have it evaluated. You know, they have to have it have a real estate person come in. So those are the important things, because otherwise you wind up with problems like that. And I just... Again, and maybe I'm just super easygoing when it comes to things like this, because I never thought that there'd be an inheritance, right? I just lived my whole life not counting on anything from my parents. It's their money. I'm a big fan of you go live your life, travel the world, knock yourselves out. You know, leave me nothing. I'm spend it all. That's fine. Because I also think the government's going to tax the bejesus out of it anyway. So why should they? Why pay the government? Go have fun with it. So I've just lived my life that way. And maybe it's for the best. And, you know, maybe that's why now I'm not going to fight anybody for anything. I'm not going to go. It's like, that's the way they wanted to leave it. That's the way they wanted to leave it. And I think ultimately in the end, you're a better person for it. It's hard, though. And obviously I'm not you. But, you know, well, thank you for the conversation. And maybe we all learn something here about planning ahead on the Brian Kilmeade Show.
From high atop Fox News headquarters in New York City, always seeking solutions, never sowing division. It's Brian Kilmeade.
And I'm Mary Walter, in for Brian Kilmeade. You can just think of me as Brian in a dress. I don't know if you want that visual, though. You can reach out to me on X at Mary Walter Radio. And I have a podcast on Tuesdays, 7:15 p.m. Eastern Time. It is live on YouTube and Getter. You can leave comments, ask questions. We have a lot of different guests. It's a lot of fun. And then the audio is available on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. And we don't always talk politics. We just did one on true crime. And we had a true crime podcaster on, and that was a lot of fun, too. And this lady right here, this is one of my favorites, Shannon Bream, anchor of Fox News Sunday, Fox News chief legal correspondent. She's the author of The Love Stories of the Bible, Speak Biblical Lessons on Romance, Friendship, and Faith. And you can follow her on X, like I do, at Shannon Bream. Shannon, thank you for joining me.
It's always great to be with you, Mary. Thank you.
Absolutely. So, and I love that you know everything about anything. So I've got some stuff loaded up here, and I hope I don't throw you off.
It's like a Jeopardy game today.
Exactly. Yes. So I'm reading all these stories, and I'm like, oh, Shannon can answer that.
Uh-oh.
So I just kept putting in the Shannon pile.
Exactly.
If you could just stay for 2 hours, that would be awesome.
Okay, sure. I've got nothing else to do.
So the left clearly trying to get Alito off the Supreme Court. They tried Clarence Thomas, and then everybody started calling him out for going after the one black guy. So then they didn't know what to do with that, because that's goes against their whole racist thing. So they picked the white guy, because white men need to be taken out of society. So they're going after Alito for a flag. So first his wife flew the American flag upside down, sign of distress. Okay, but they turned that into, no, that's a symbol of stop the steal. And I'm like, wait, what? When did that happen? Now they found out that he flew this flag. It's a pine tree on a white background. It's a historic flag. It goes back to the days of the Revolution, and it's called Appeal to Heaven. That is the Appeal to Heaven flag. Mm-hmm. That now is a sign of supporting the insurrection, which I did not know. What is happening? And I love that he flew this flag kind of like is a finger in the eye of all these people.
Well, and the thing is, I don't know if he had anything to do with the flag at the beach house. It might be Martha Ann Alito who was running the flag poles. I don't know. I reached out to them for comment on the second flag story. But that flag is something that people who are upset about it now, I'm not sure had even heard of it before a couple of days ago. But the left is saying clearly it's an alt-right thing. It puts you in league with people who are, prone to overturn elections and that kind of thing. I'm waiting for an explanation from the Alitos about why they flew it, who flew it. I'll report that as soon as we get that. At the same time, Speaker Johnson flies it. Senator Tom Cotton says he's going to add it outside of his office, saying it's something that George Washington approved and was part of the Revolutionary War effort, that Americans were about appealing to God for his divine protection and that kind of thing. So I don't know what the Alito explanation is on that. We'll see. But I do think, if the media wants to dig on stories, that's what they do. If they want to report on these things, that's fair. But I also think it just needs to apply across the board. And you don't really have to dig back very much because, there was a Ninth Circuit judge who, during the same-sex marriage arguments in the Ninth Circuit, he actually ruled on a case where his wife was the director of a group that signed on to two briefs or in the case. And he said, essentially, her viewpoints are hers, and what she does not influence the way I make decisions. That was a spouse that everybody seemed fine with that. You also have to remember the late Justice Ginsburg herself said things about President Trump. She made it clear when he was a candidate she did not like him. She did not think – she worried about what would happen to the country if he became president. She even asked the question in 2016, how has he gotten away with not turning over his tax records, his tax returns?
Right.
Well, fast forward to when he was president, she actually heard and ruled in cases where there was a subpoena for his tax documents. So – I mean, this outrage is the timing for some people suspect, but I'm saying it's fine to report on these stories and dig into these things, but let's just do it across the board.
Well, come on. You're expecting journalism, Shannon. How dare you?
I think that's only fair, right?
Right. Yeah, well, that's just never going to happen. And you're so optimistic and it's adorable. you know, you talk about the judges, but what about Marchand, right? They mm-hmm. they want to get rid of Alito because of a flag, but yet they don't think that Marchand should recuse himself when he has a clear bias. You know, his daughter's making millions of dollars off of this trial here, and some of the rulings and the gag order and all these things that so many people are coming out and say this is unconstitutional. But let's face it, he doesn't care. There are never any repercussions. If this goes up to the Supreme Court or a higher court and they say, yeah, you violated this man's constitutional rights, there's never any punishment for these judges. There's no repercussion. They just keep going about their business and they'll collect their pension and all's right with the world. Does that need to change?
Well, there are a lot of questions about the case that I've been here in New York, you know, off and on covering it and been to the courthouse and seeing how things are playing out. And there are questions about Judge Marchand and his daughter. And it came to light a few days ago that apparently at some point he was privately admonished about political donations that he had made and the optics of that as a judge. So there are people who have had concerns about this. I think that other ethics charges have been filed, but people are filing complaints, whether it turns into some kind of ethics charge. You got to see once it's investigated. Mm-hmm. But again, if you're going to go after judges because of something their spouse may or may not be involved in, if you're going to do it on the right, to do it for judges that you think lean left. And in that case there, this case with Judge Marchand, it's raised many questions. Now, the Trump legal team will tell you these are things that are going to work for us on appeal if he's convicted. And so they feel like they've got material that will help them that they think shows a clear bias from the bench.
Yeah. Now, I want to switch gears and go to the election. And there was a chance that Biden would not be, or the Democrat nominee would not be on the ballot in Ohio or Alabama mm-hmm. because of the fact that their nomination, their convention where they nominate their candidate was too close to the deadlines. They're going to miss the deadlines to be on the ballot mm-hmm. in those two states. And of course, Mike DeWine, the governor of Ohio, has mm-hmm. called a special session for the state legislature to get Joe Biden on the ballot, and Alabama lawmakers passed legislation that will allow mm-hmm. Biden to appear on the ballot. Why? Why do this makes me crazy. Does anyone, honestly, even you, do you honestly think Democrats would have done that for Donald Trump? As a matter of fact, they were trying to get him off
right.
ballots in other states. Why do Republicans do this? Why don't they fight?
Well, remember when that was going down with Colorado and Maine, some of these other
right.
states trying to keep President Trump off the ballot? There were a number of Republicans who came out and said, this is not how this should go down. There were Democrats. There were some also who said, listen, if we want the American people to have confidence in these elections, we need to make it a fair fight, meaning these two main candidates are on all state ballots that they qualify for. So I think it's tough for Republicans to now come back and say, oh, but in this case, we're going to keep President Biden off. I'm sure there was some pressure there. Like, you guys made the arguments for keeping Trump on so the American people have a choice. But yeah, I mean, the Democrats, it's their calendar that sort of made the mess.
Right.
And, you know, I think that these governors know that there would be a lot of hue and cry if they did not find some way to fix this after especially arguing on behalf of President Trump.
Well, again, to your point, two different situations. They were proactively doing things to keep Trump off the ballot. Democrats did this to themselves. They knew when the convention was. They knew when the deadlines were. They just assumed that Republicans would give in and bail them out, which is exactly what happened.
I think a lot of conservatives are mad because obviously Ohio is a humongous prize.
Yes.
But you got to think about what that conversation would have been like if,
I don't care.
You know, a red state or red governor keeps, the current president of the United States off of that. But yeah, I get you. I hear that a lot of people would want to have that fight. And apparently the governor's not one of them.
No, of course not. Of course not, because Republicans always do the right thing. And until they learn how to fight like Democrats, they're going to keep losing, in my humble opinion, because I don't care what the other side thinks or says. Oh, well, you should have looked at the playbook, checked your calendar before
yeah,
you.
Yeah, the conventions, they're set way in advance, and we know where they are. I'm so excited. I've had them marked on my calendar for a long time.
So
can't
are
wait.
You going to go? Are you going to go to the
yeah,
Democrat
I'm going to
one?
Go to both. Mm-hmm.
Are you going to wear a suit of armor?
No. I mean, I like going in there. This is the American people need to hear from everybody and see what's going on the ground. I will say I have been at some conventions where I took a little bit of heat, but, I'm used to that and I'm a grown up. So I just enjoy doing my job and being there on the scene.
Yeah, I'm afraid that it's going to be just like 1968 look like a county carnival.
Yes, I really pray and hope not. I know there's a ton of pressure on state and local and federal officials that are going to have to manage, you know, protests and all kinds of things. So, listen, that's part of what we do is being there and telling people what's happening. So I always wear my sneaks. This will not be a four-inch stiletto situation running around the conventions. I'm like, nope, you need to have on something where you can move quickly.
Absolutely. You got to be able to run. What is happening? This is not getting a lot of coverage, but Judge Eileen Cannon has Jack Smith's team in the courtroom. They were there on Wednesday, and she has now postponed indefinitely their case against Donald Trump. That was supposed to start May 20th. But now it's almost as if Jack Smith is now on trial in front of Judge Cannon. What is happening in that courtroom?
Well, you know, the pretrial motions always take up so much time. So when people say, if they're an opponent of President Trump and say, like, this isn't fair, he's not getting tried in time, like, these things are moving at warp speed. But most trials, especially these big federal trials, you mentioned the one down at Mar-a-Lago, the documents case, that, I mean, it is normal that it would take time for all of these pretrial motions. Now, there's a conservative legal group that has come out to say that they have uncovered a document from Obama-era Defense Department saying that they had original of some of these documents that they were seeking that led to the raid of Mar-a-Lago. I haven't read that memo for myself. Those are the reports. And maybe that's part of the conversation, because when you're dealing with classified documents, there is so much pretrial haggling that goes on about who's going to be able to see what. How do you get clearances? How do you get this before the jury? So it's normal that these things would take time. And so critics of Judge Cannon will say, oh, she's, you know, throwing this, you know, in favor of President Trump. I think she's honestly just dealing with pretrial stuff. And there are a lot of questions she's apparently going to have for Jack Smith and how he's prosecuting this as special prosecutor.
So I'm super impressed with you, because that came from America First Legal.
Yes.
And I prepped that, and I'm like, I don't know if this is too far down the rabbit hole. I don't know if I don't want to blindside her with this. And of course, you knew it. And it's
well,
about
I haven't read the memo, but I have seen the report. So it's on my list to dig into today in my show prep.
Yeah, because more and more is coming out. And I love that Judge Cannon is saying, hey, pump the brakes here. There's a lot of stuff coming out here that maybe this is there's something hinky going on with the entire Mar-a-Lago case on a lot of different levels.
And as a judge, you want people to have confidence in what happens in that courtroom. And, you know, maybe there is some misconstruing of what these documents are, of what Jack Smith decisions he's made. But she wants that to be clear, because before people start making decisions and hearing cases, you know, all of our institutions have taken a hit, and the Gallup and Pew polling, like, people are losing confidence. And so I think judges have a huge obligation to make sure, hey, we got our house in order. We have all the relevant information. Now we can move forward and everybody can have confidence in the process.
Absolutely. Shannon Bream, always a pleasure and a treat when I get to talk to you. I've yet to stump you.
I'm sure the time is coming.
Which I love. Catch her on Fox News Sunday, Shannon Bream. And good luck. Start training now so you can do a quick sprint at the DNC if necessary.
I'll see you there. You need to come too.
I would love to. I would love to. Shannon, thank you so much. Have a great weekend and God bless. Shannon Bream, S-H-A-N-N-O-N-B-R-E-A-M on X if you would like to follow her. 866-408-7669 is my number. I'll get to some of your calls if I can get them in here. And also coming up a little bit later is Josh Krauscher. He is a Fox News radio political analyst and also the editor-in-chief of Jewish Insider. We're going to talk about all those little Hitler youth that are springing up around our college campuses and paying tens and tens of thousands of dollars for that indoctrination. So that's coming up on the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Giving you everything you need to know. You're with Brian Kilmeade. He's so busy, he'll make your head spin. It's Brian Kilmeade.
Mary Walter in for Brian Kilmeade. Coming up, Josh Krauscher will be joining us. Talk about what's happening on our college campuses and the indoctrination of an entire generation into terrorism, basically. Let's go to Beth in Michigan. She wants to talk about Memorial Day and veterans and helping veterans. Beth, welcome to the Brian Kilmeade Show. Hi.
Well, hi, Mary. Good to talk to you again. I was, you know, thinking about Memorial Day coming up, and I know that we honor those who are killed in action. But I just went to a ceremony this past week where my husband, who is a Vietnam vet, was presented with one of the quilts of valor. He and I think five others. They're part of a group. He worked on the Chinooks over in Vietnam.
Yeah.
He wasn't a pilot, but he did have flying time in, but he was a crew chief and other positions on the helicopter. But I have noticed over the years that being in that group and being able to talk to the same, you know, some of the same people that were there when he was about what they went through has helped him tremendously. And it's just, I just want to say how important it is that if you're a veteran to find, like you said, find your tribe, find somebody that you can talk to, because it's definitely made a difference in his life.
Interesting. Thank you for sharing this, Beth. You know, and I hate to keep harping on this, but to me, the loss of the VFWs, there used to be so many around when I was a kid. Like, they were everywhere. And then I knew where there was one that we used to drive by on our way to the vet. And you would see there was a white house and, you know, VFW public welcome. And, you know, when I was a kid, you know, going to the VFW, my dad would go. Not, my dad was a vet, but he, you know, fought the battle of the New Jersey Turnpike. So going to Fort Dix, he never really fought anywhere. But he liked to go there just because everything was cheaper. Beer was cheaper. But it seems to me as if this generation, the younger generation, I sound 10,000 years old, they don't even go to bars anymore. They don't do that in-person socializing. And I think COVID really exacerbated that and made it a lot more difficult for them. And is that something that maybe, am I wrong on that? Let me just ask you, since your husband is a vet, am I wrong that they just don't, that doesn't appeal to them anymore?
Absolutely correct. Because I think of there's a VFW and a Legion here where we are in Michigan. And we've gone a couple of times. And yeah, stuff's cheaper and food's usually pretty good. But yeah. It's just a place to go drink. Nobody talks. The jukebox is playing and everybody sits there with their beer and nobody really talks to each other. And, you know, we stopped going because there was nobody there to discuss, you know, no young people. I'm just surprised they're still open.
Yeah.
And sad.
It's interesting. And when you say nobody's talking, and I'm like, well, that's because it's filled with men. So, men don't talk to each other. They don't talk, you know, they can spend hours in a lake on a boat and you say, oh, what'd you talk about? Nothing. And yeah. I honestly believe that. I just believe there were no conversations had. Beth, thank you. I appreciate you sharing that. And thank you being the wife of a service member. You serve as well. And it's important that we take care of them and find out exactly what works for them and what they need. And that's an important thing. We're speaking with someone from Mission Roll Call. So it's missionrollcall.org if you want to check that out. Coming up, as I said, Josh Krauscher will be joining us. Follow him on X at Josh Krauscher, and it's Krauschaar. And we're going to talk about what's happening on our college campuses. And my question is, I don't understand. First of all, I was shocked. Am I the only one who was shocked when I saw just this open, rampant anti-Semitism? Could not believe it. I thought, oh, come on. They're going to be shouted down. They're going to be kicked off the campuses. And they weren't. And they weren't. And, you see the president of Northwestern there being hammered by Elise Stefanik. I think she did a yeoman's job in handing this guy his hat. He clearly did not look at the videos of what happened to those who went before him. But as parents, were you surprised to find out that you've raised, you know, a little Hitler youth? Because my kids, I would have pulled the rug out from under them right then and there. But Josh is coming up. We're going to discuss it here on the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Information you want. Truth you demand. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
And I'm Mary Walter in for Brian Kilmeade. I'll take your calls later at 866-408-7669. But first, we go to our guest, Josh Krauscher. He is a Fox News political analyst, and he also is the editor-in-chief of Jewish Insider. You can find him on X at Josh Krauscher, and that is Krauschaar, because otherwise people would never be able to find it if I didn't tell him how to spell it. Josh, welcome to the show.
Mary, it's great to be back with you, and I'm glad you gave the spelling. That's the only way you can find me on Twitter, if I don't know how to spell my last name.
Exactly. And I make the mistake of like A-U-E-R. Like I spell it all different ways. And now I finally have it in my brain on how to do it because I've been doing it for how many years, Josh?
I know. My goodness. It means curly hair. If it was TV, you would know that, I don't know how that got the match. But it's once you get it spelled, you get it in the Twitter.
Yeah, I see it. So I was just saying before you came on the air that when I saw what was happening on these campuses, I was shocked. I thought for sure that this is, blatant anti-Semitism. This is going to be put down right away because never again, right? Never again. So this is going to be put down right away. Imagine my shock when they're like, well, And I think you have the right to free speech. If you want to scream, you have the right to say hateful, horrible, bigoted, racist things in this country, whether I want to hear it or not. But that's the beauty of this, that we have protected speech. And I think we need to hear people who are bigoted and racist because now I know who you are. But to me, it crosses the line when things became physical. You knew they were going to become physical, and they did become physical. Jewish students were isolated and surrounded by mobs. And they're like, we're not touching them. We're not touching them. That's not the point. Jewish students were prevented from entering certain areas on the campus at UCLA. There's a video of a black man not being allowed to enter certain areas on the UCLA campus. Let's just start with the basic here. How the heck did we wind up with a generation that thinks it's perfectly okay to be anti-Semitic and pledge allegiance to a terrorist group? When did that happen?
Boy, Mary, we could be here all day talking about like how this happened in the first place. I mean, the thing that is stunning, and as someone who observes politics, is you're really only seeing these very anti-Israel opinions, anti-Semitic views, this kind of hatred among the youngest Americans, really just like college students, maybe like Gen Z, a little older than those who just graduated from college. And it's not just the issue of surrounding the Middle East and anti-Semitism. They don't believe in free speech. They don't believe in the same liberal values, traditionally liberal values that most other Americans have sort of taken for granted. And that's, I think, what's really alarming leaders. Certainly, there's been a lot of concern in the Jewish community about this open and naked anti-Semitism that's been such a major part of these rallies, protests, encampments. But I think the bigger question is what are they teaching in college? Like, why are professors like using Hamas-type talking points to teach Middle East studies? What kind of history is being taught in some of our most elite institutions? Why are faculty members like spouting terrorist-friendly slogans at campus after campus? And I think there is a root cause, as they like to say in the academy, a systemic issue here that, the best and brightest colleges are actually teaching some pretty radical, extreme content to the most youngest and most impressionable students. And I think also that the youngest generation, you go to college to learn, to explore, to test ideas, to argue. Like that was certainly my experience 20 years ago when I was in college. But you're not seeing that as much anymore. You're seeing a lot of more activism, more propaganda, frankly, in the classroom, and less discussion. And I think we kind of took that for granted. We're like, yeah, there's always a lot of craziness in college. That's sort of par for the course. But when we actually see what's going on these individual universities and some of the faculty members that are saying just radical, vile things, it's not just the kids. It's a lot of the things that are being taught that have started to come home to roost in many of these institutions.
So the disconnect for me is the parents. Where are the parents? There were 13 students who were not allowed to graduate. They will not graduate. Well, they did not. They just had the ceremony. And the Harvard Corporation, which, by the way, is the oldest corporation in the Western Hemisphere, according to Harvard. So they said so. So it must be true. But they are the ultimate authority at Harvard, and they overruled a faculty vote and affirmed a decision by the administration. They backed up the administration to prevent 13 activists from graduating because they took part in an illegal encampment on the campus. They said, no, you can't do that. You can't just camp out here. And they defied that. And so now they're being told they can't graduate. And at the graduation ceremony, the Harvard senior chosen to deliver the English address. I guess they give it to it, I guess, English and Spanish. I have no idea, more than one language. And she went off script. She had a different speech up the sleeve of her gown, and she said she recognized those 13 undergraduates that were not allowed to walk. She got a she rips the school for doing that. She got a standing ovation, including some of the faculty, to your point, and the rest of her remarks covered the war in Gaza. She was doxxed for her views. It's terrible. And she says this is a war on free speech and free expression. So they want the First Amendment when it's their speech, but they don't want the First Amendment when it's someone else's speech because they're tiny little fascists. But my the disconnect for me is the parents. Parents sitting in that audience, and that's your kid. My father would have gone up on the stage and ripped me right the hell off. It never would have happened. So it says to me that there's an older generation that has also been indoctrinated in this propaganda, or are they just tolerating it?
Well, yeah, that's a great question, Mary. And, you know, from my experience, I think it's less about parents agreeing with some of the radical behaviors taking place on campuses, and it's more that they've been indulging their kids' activism. And it's, you know, they don't, you know, like there's a general, I think, societal tendency not to cast judgment, not to be critical, not to set boundaries, right? And when you're not willing to say being supportive of Hamas is unacceptable in my household or unacceptable for you to kind of do that on a campus and just sort of say anything goes, sure. I mean, it makes it a lot easier for this stuff to be tolerated. I actually think it's more the administration. I mean, look, you started off, Mary, by talking about the sort of the free speech dynamic. And of course, like, especially at the public universities, that's a cherished and sacred principle. The problem here, I don't think it has anything to do with free speech. It's literally, these are cases, as we've seen on the hearings on Capitol Hill, these are cases of harassment. These are cases where you know, Jews were penalized for just simply supporting Israel and in a classroom designed to study foreign policy or Middle East studies. These are instances where in UCLA, you mentioned the incident where a student wasn't able to walk on the quad. He was being blocked by a mob of people in keffiyehs and waving Palestinian flags and wouldn't let this guy through. You see, and this is on a more sort of depressing level, like there's a social stigma now that anyone who's Jewish, and most Jews are supportive of Israel, like there is a social stigma that students, since the one of the worst terrorist attacks we've seen, certainly for Jews since the Holocaust, it's Jews that are being punished. It's Jews that are, you know, as overwhelming number are supportive of Israel. They're the ones facing social stigmas on campus. And it's a type of discrimination that, you know, you think that at a university you'd be having the most tolerant, open-minded people. That's sort of the mantra that you hear from these university presidents. And free speech, it's kind of stunning to see the degree of discrimination and unwilling to hear other people's points of view on what was supposedly one of the most open-minded institutions in our whole country.
So, and we're running out of time here, but I will go a little bit further with you on this. And I will say there are a lot of Jews in this country who don't identify with Israel and are very liberal and don't have a problem with necessarily what they would label free speech. I know several of them who, you know, still going to vote Democrat. They don't care. Like, even this would not open their eyes and make them vote Republican. They just, you know, they just won't. And this, to them, they don't feel attached or a kinship to Israel. So I think there's even a divide in this country among the Jews.
So, I mean, I always like to look at the data to kind of, you know, because there are a lot of anecdotes. It's like, well, there are a lot of Jews that are protesting with the kind of at the encampments. And yes, there definitely are some, and they've been sort of tokenized by folks like Ilhan Omar or Rashida Tlaib. But when you look at the Pew Research Center data, when you look at a lot of the really high quality data, sort of the Jewish public opinion, you know, 85 to 90% of Jews definitely have at least some attachment to Israel. We could go into more depth about why that is, but it's an overwhelming share. We're not talking 50-50. We're talking, you know, about 90% if you're Jewish, even those that are not quite as, you know, connected or not quite as observant or religious. So, you know, you see these examples where certain outliers, and look, everyone has a right to free speech, and we should have debates over these issues. These are fundamental issues that should be debated and discussed and learned about on campuses. There's a long history about the Middle East and the history of Zionism that should be taught in a fair-minded way. But, you know, I think there's a misimpression, and you see this in some of the media coverage, that there is this divide. It would be like saying, you know, like, yes, there are a lot of prominent African-American Republicans, maybe more so than there were in 2016 supporting Donald Trump. But if you said it was like 50-50 or the black community was divided, that would be inaccurate. And, you know, clearly most voters, African-American voters are Democrats. So it's the same thing with Jewish voters in Israel. Like, if you look at the data, about 85-90% have at least some affinity towards Israel, have some connection to it, this part of
the country. Well, I guess living in the People's Socialist Republic of New Jersey, I probably know more of them. There may be a greater concentration here of people, right? Because they're very, very liberal. So last question. Where do we go from here? Where does this go? I see another summer of love on the horizon. We were going to have another election year summer of love, which seems to be go every 4 years. Seems to be the new norm that we're just going to have our cities burned down. And I think the target or the impetus for this is going to be the war in Gaza, right? That it's going to be the war, and it's going to be excused and tolerated the way the last summer of love was excused and tolerated. What do you think?
Well, it was more of a summer of hate in '68 at the Chicago Democratic National Convention back then, and we've seen, the biggest difference, interestingly enough, on the campuses when you go back to like the late '60s is, you know, there was more of a peace and love vibe on the campuses that back then.
Right.
Now it's more of a like terrorist slogans being waved and not letting Jews cross over the line. I mean, there's a lot more hate. There's a lot more just discrimination. However radical both types of protests were in our different time periods. There's a really sinister anger that's really we've seen this metastasize into some anti-Semitism as well. I mean, that's the big difference. So I think the Democrats at the convention in Chicago this August very, very worried that a lot of the protesters, a lot of the professional activists, the anti-Israel activists are planning to go to Chicago and make a mess of the convention. The Democratic Party itself is divided on a lot of these important issues involving the Middle East, and you have a very the Squad, the Democratic left is very outspoken on this issue. So, I think we're going to see a lot of chaos in Chicago, and it's an issue that's on every Democratic lawmaker's mind. It's certainly on the mind of the White House, because that convention in Chicago, boy, there's a lot of symbolism to what happened over 50 years ago.
Yeah, no, and when I say summer of love, I was mocking the mayor of Seattle, who said like, oh no, it's a loving gathering in CHOP, and when she took it over. She said it was just a summer of love, and I was like, okay, as far as Chicago goes, I don't know about you, I'm stocking up on the popcorn and beer, because watching Frankenstein's monster come back to the castle could be very, very interesting. Josh Crasher, thank you so much for joining me. I do appreciate it, and keep up the good fight. Thank you.
Thanks, Mark. Have a good one.
Have a great weekend. All right, it's all you. 866-408-7669. Coming up on the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Want even more, Brian? Download the podcast at BrianKilmeadeShow.com. Every episode, exclusive interviews on demand. More of Kilmeade coming up. From his mouth to your ears, it's Brian Kilmeade.
In this election, Republicans have their ride or die candidate, who they want to be president forever. And Democrats, they also have a guy.
So the best way to get something done, if you hold near and dear to you that you like to be able to... Anyway...
Four more years.
Joe Biden has an enthusiasm problem. The polling shows that Democrats are not enthused.
Joe Biden, Democrats are not excited.
But maybe we in the media are out of touch? I hit the streets to ask, what do voters really think of Joe Biden?
Not the most excited.
I mean, it's okay. He's a big ice cream guy.
Mm-hmm.
Can't vote against that.
He's our president.
He's our president.
Yeah.
Slap that on a t-shirt. I love it.
But then I found one person whose passion... whelmed me.
On a scale of 1 to 10, how excited are you about voting for Joe Biden?
11.
11? Yep. Oh my God. Is this Joe Biden, or is this like a famous corgi on Instagram named Joe Biden that I'm not aware of?
Joseph Robinette Biden.
I didn't even know that was his full name.
Junior.
Oh my God. There's an older one?
All right, so this is a brilliant skit with Troy Iwata from The Daily Show. And, you know, he goes out and he talks to people and, you know, he's asking about Joe Biden and they mesh it all together. So he finds this guy named Dakota Galbin, who was the last person you heard there, who said that, in a scale from 1 to 10, he loves Joe Biden. He's an 11. He's at an 11. And he is Joe Biden's one and only super fan. Here's more.
Meet Dakota Galbin, Joe Biden's biggest and only super fan. Could he hold the key to helping Biden defeat Donald Trump and his MAGA army?
Trump has this huge fan club of tens of thousands of really intense weirdos. And Biden has you.
When did Dakota first realize he was Biden curious?
I was a senior in high school in 2012, and I had just come out of the closet, and Joe Biden had announced his support for marriage equality. And you thought to yourself, he's a little young right now to be president, but maybe in 8 years, he'll be ready. At the time, not so much, but this man literally came out of retirement to save our country from white supremacists and fascism. So you like him more now than when he was just Obama's white friend?
Absolutely.
Oh.
Did you hear the audience clap like a bunch of seals? Because when he said he's come out of retirement to help us beat white supremacy and fascism, when they're literally that side of the aisle are the fascists. They're the ones who want to quell free speech. They're the ones who, you know, don't want you to be able to say what you want. That's what fascists do. You know, the Hunter Biden laptop story got you thrown off of social media because of the Biden administration, or at the time, I guess it was, the Biden administration, who their lackeys who were all moving back, going back to Obama, moving into social media companies and putting pressure on them, the Democrats, to shut you down, to throw you off. All right, there's more to this. I don't want to talk too much because I want to get to it. Here's more.
So what does Dakota see in this guy?
Is it his swag, his whispery voice, what's left of his hair? Mostly his policies. There's so many to choose from.
Really? Wow. Yeah. See, I can't even think of any, so go off, sis.
I would think when he came into office, he immediately got to work with the American Rescue Plan. He followed it up with the Bipartisan Infrastructure Act, the Chips and Science Act.
The Chips and Salsa Act?
Chips and Science.
Oh, you know, maybe we need to make policy more fun.
I think you're right. There was his 80th birthday when he had all the candles on his cake.
Yeah, I guess we can have fun with glaring reminders of his age.
It was just so funny. But there are people who love Joe Biden. I know a couple. I'm sure you know a couple as well. And listen, they feel the same way about people who love Trump, right? I love Trump. I'm sure my husband's now going to go out and get one of those appeal to heaven flags, because apparently now that, you know, they are losing their mind over that. I'm sure that'll be flying, and I'm sure I'm going to be on more watch lists than I already am. I am Mary Walter. Thank you for letting me join you here on the Brian Kilmeade Show. It is always a pleasure. Have a wonderful weekend.
I'm Charles Payne. Listen to my Unstoppable Prosperity podcast so I can get you making money right now. Whether stocks are hitting new all-time highs or in free-fall mode, opportunities abound. So why are so many potential investors still sitting on the sidelines? In a new season of my podcast, I'm going to get you in the game. After 38 years on Wall Street, I'm ready to impart some lessons and get you invested in the greatest wealth-generating machine in history. Listen anytime, everywhere at foxbusinesspodcast.com or wherever you listen to your favorite podcast.
Listen to the show ad-free on Fox News Podcast Plus, on Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music with your Prime membership, or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.